agenda is here. Marcus, you're up to scribe today. Would you mind scribing?
No, sure, that's fine.
Thanks. Any before we get started, any changes or additions to the agenda? I put your issue from last week on there for the first item, Marcus.
Yeah, okay.
All right, if there are no changes, let's go ahead and get started. First up is issue 140, considering the Objectify Link Graphify API method. I had moved this to the JSON-LD next generation group, bug group, which basically means this is something that we're not going to include in the 1.0 spec, mostly because I didn't think that we were ready to put it into the spec. But since I did that, Nicholas has put forward a proposal on this Graphify mechanism, or I guess he's calling it Link or something like that.
Connect, I think.
Connect, sorry, yes, Connect. And I guess what we could do is the concern I have, the big concern that I have is that we might be slowing down the process to get to 1.0 by discussing this. So my biggest concern is that we are going to push the 1.0 release back by 1 or 2 months because there are so many other issues that kind of come up when we start talking about Graphify and Link. For example, doing searches on a graph, or how do you find a particular node in this Graphify mechanism? How do you follow the graph? Things like that. Again, that's my biggest concern. It's not necessarily that we want this mechanism or not. It's the time it would take to address this mechanism, actually work on this mechanism. That said, if you know Nicholas or you guys feel like we can get this done very quickly, then we should do that. I think my preference would be to see it worked on in parallel. And if we can get it done before last call, before we have a last call, then that's great. But we shouldn't hold up last call for it. There's another alternative, and that's to, in the last call document, say, hey, we're thinking very heavily about adding Graphify, and that might get put into the candidate recommendation document. If you want to follow the Graphify discussion, we could, you know, put a pointer to another document, the Connect document. That's the other alternative. Any concerns? First of all, what are people's opinions on working on this or putting it off until the next version of JSON-LD? Marcus, did you want to go first since you had a pretty strong opinion about it?
No, I just had a pretty strong opinion about removing framing and Connectify and basically everything that allows you to access some properties or some nodes directly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, we have flattening in there, but it really requires you to loop over all nodes to get to a specific node. We already have the what we call a node map in the spec, but there is currently no way to represent that as valid JSON-LD. So I don't know, perhaps that's also a lot of work, but if you would have something like the ID containers, which Nicholas, I think, proposed some time ago, we might be able to express that node map also valid JSON-LD, so we could just expose that as an API method instead, or for example.
These are sort of orthogonal issues. If you don't have a node map, then it does mean you need to search across elements of an array, or you need to go and construct your own map, having iterated through the array. But not all systems work that way. If you're working with something like Backbone, it expects to get an array of objects for which it creates models, and then it provides its own index method into those models. So in my case, it doesn't actually add anything. But you're right that the flatten method does have as a byproduct creating a node map. There just is no way to actually bring it out. Now, it's not necessarily the case that to expose that through the API, it has to be a valid JSON-LT document.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we had ID maps, that would certainly be a way to have that expressed as what would then be a valid document. But I'm also worried that we add things like this and it just starts to get to be more complex, and it's a destabilizing. I think we should consider that we don't have to have everything part of the sort of the W3C spec when we first come out, that it's perfectly legitimate to have, you know, supplemental specs published by the community group.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that, but I still believe it's a bit weird to have an API and you are, I mean, without writing something yourself on top of it, you can't access data if you don't know the shape, the exact shape of the data beforehand.
That's true. I guess one of the questions I've been asking myself is, would people find it difficult to write such a feature? So is the idea that someone would write something that would iterate over an array and build a map out of the ability of most of these developers? And I was thinking back, and a vast amount of the JavaScript that I write when I'm working with fairly large data models, I end up writing that function over and over and over again. So on one side, that's an argument that we should include it in the API. On the other side, it's an argument to say that people do this all the time anyway. It's not a big deal, right? And if people do it all the time, then they can index it in exactly the way they want to. We think that they're going to want to index it by node ID, but what happens when they want to index it by something else, like a certain property? So I think that there are arguments either way, and I agree with what you're saying, Marcus, in that it would be nice if we could figure this stuff out and put it in the API, in the 1.0 API. That's certainly what I'd prefer. I just don't feel like we're making enough progress on the issue to not endanger the rest of the spec getting to rec as quickly as possible. I think if we pick this issue up, it's going to take us a while to figure it out, just like the property generator issue. I mean, you know, when I definitely admit that I thought the property generator issue would be this really easy thing that we'd get knocked out in 2 weeks, and instead we've spent like a month and a half on it. And all those little things kind of add up. And I think we're at the point with the specs now where we really need to just get it to last call and get it out there.
Yep.
At least that's an opinion. It's not saying that we must do that. I'm concerned about the amount of time that this is going to suck up in the group. And I also think it's something that we should do. We should do it, but after we've got the JSON-LD specs through to the 1.0 rec.
I think there's also, I mean, from my perspective anyway, there's a certain amount of energy that's left to get this out, and I think the more we tack things on, the more the energy of the group, at least in my part, lags. And so I'd just rather button it up, put it out there. I think it's great what it does. I think we might not know all the use cases that it's going to be used for. And so I think there's having another ecosystem for companion specs to come out. I mean, maybe we'll foster even more types of things, people doing some work on it that we can push forward. We don't necessarily need to wait for a RDF2 in order to be able to do a JSON-LD 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
It could always come out as part of some other body.
Mm-hmm.
If in fact the community group isn't adequate.
Right. Marcus, any thoughts on this? Are those arguments those resonate enough to for us to table this, or do you still feel pretty strongly that we should work on this stuff for the 1.0 release?
I mean, I'm completely fine if we continue with the remaining work, and then we can also have another look at the end. We just leave the issue open, and before we really go to last call, we have another look at the issue and see if we want to do it or if we don't do it for 1.0.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what would probably help me anyway is if you're interested in that and you're able to not only sort of put in the spec work, but you know, test suites, things like that. That sort of makes it a lot easier to, you know, that sort of in the past, I think that's where I've run into issues is when I start to implement the algorithms myself, and that sort of causes conversation. So the more work that's done that pushes that along, the more likely we are to actually do something, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's exactly how features get into specs. Someone, one or two or three people end up doing all of the legwork to make sure that it's a solid feature, and then it's just a matter of just doing a proposal saying that you'll accept it or not. And I know that if what we were staring at was all the spec text was done, the tests are done, and the feature's been implemented at least once, it would be a really easy proposal, but we're not in that position right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess the proposal then, Marcus, is to table the issue and raise it again right before we go into last call and see where we are and see whether or not we want to address the issue at that point or further delay it for a future version of JSON-LD.
Yeah.
Okay. Table issue 140 for the time being. Delay discussion until all other issues for JSON LD 1.0 are complete, have been addressed. Okay, table issue 140, delay discussion until all. Plus one, minus one, if you guys want. And then, Lynn, you're free to plus one, minus one this if you're there.
Or plus zero.
Or, yep. All right. Next issue on the agenda is issue 160, which is the property generator round tripping algorithm. Lynn, thanks for being on the call. Hopefully we can close the loop on this faster that you're on here. All right, so Greg... First, Dave Longley and I discussed the issue a bit last week and came up with this proposal called property aliasing, which we then discovered was insufficient for the Drupal use case. We talked a bit with Greg about it. Greg's the one that found out that it was insufficient for the Drupal use case. Dave Longley proposed, in addition to the property aliasing proposal, But all of us agreed that that addition, which is basically tagging things, saying where the origin of the data came from, was just unworkable, meaning that if you took the expanded input and compacted it, you couldn't completely compact it because you couldn't get rid of the origin markers for where certain attributes, sorry, where certain properties came from. So what that left us with was Greg's proposal. So we discussed Greg's proposal a bit more and agreed that there were a couple of, or at least the consensus that we came to was that we could make a couple of tweaks to Greg's algorithm where at least Greg, myself, and Dave Longley would be happy enough with the feature to plus one it in a proposal. Now, those changes would be that we would, Greg's algorithm basically, before, when it would use a property generator to expand data, would take one value and use a subject definition, and everywhere else that referenced that subject definition, it would use a node reference. Yes, thank you. Node definition and node reference. So it would use a node reference elsewhere, and the concern that at least Dave Longley and I had with that is that people might try to use the node reference because that's the property, that's the URL that they're used to working with, and they wouldn't, without something like Objectify and Link, they wouldn't be able to get to that data very easily. So we wanted there to be a way for them just to hit any one of those property-generated URLs and get the same data back from each of them. So that leads to this massive explosion in data, potential massive explosion in data, which Marcus said was a concern, and I agree. So we'll talk about that in a bit. We'll get to Marcus's proposal in a bit. The other understanding that we came to was that you had to tag these nodes, these property generator expanded nodes, with BNode IDs. Because if you didn't do that, you don't know whether or not you should kind of coalesce information. You don't know if the node is the same thing or it just happens to be another blank node with the exact same information.
Well, actually, you know that it's not the same, because if you're not explicit about using a BNode, then they are different BNodes and therefore are different nodes.
Right. Yep, exactly.
So they have to be tagged, unless, of course, they have an IRI.
Already, yeah. So if they don't have an ID, if the thing associated with the property generator does not have an ID, you must generate a blank node identifier for it.
I think before we go an awful lot further, it's worth asking Lynn if her use of these property generators would have values which would themselves be node definitions or not. Because most of the work so that is the case, okay. And then the other thing that was... go ahead.
You know what, we would definitely have node references that use IRIs. We would have node definitions, yeah.
Okay, so for instance, you might have a user, a person, and an address, and use a couple of different a property generator for the address term, so that the address would be expanded, and you'd want full address in all the places that work with.
Yeah, because there are some things that don't have URIs; they aren't actually entities, and address is a prime example of that. That's actually a field for us, so we don't actually have an IRI that we could use for node references, because we're trying to actually just use node references for anything that is an entity in our system.
So the other question came into sort of what the intended interoperability is. In other words, you're generating a JSON LD graph, which when it expands contains this duplication, which you then might share with another application that only knew about, say, one half, let's say you the you were using both schema.org and FOF for things like people and addresses, and the data potentially might be modified by an application that only knew about the FOF information, which
mm-hmm.
might mean, let's say, it adds a second address for a person, but it only adds it using a FOF property. Is your expectation to be able to get back to the to infer with the sort of the schema version of address from that? I think that would be very difficult to do, but it was sort of an open question.
It would be nice to have, but definitely not a requirement, I don't think. So Manu and I talked about this, and I think that for the set of use cases that we're working with, saying that if you are adding data and then posting or putting or something like that, the data back, that it's we're fine with having to use a shared context and doing it in compact form.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think some of the examples we had, you were using, say, schema about in two different property generators, but the first URI was different in each of the cases. So like field tag,
exactly.
And field related, and it's almost like that's expressing a sub property relationship. But if you were to just add a schema about to it, you wouldn't want to automatically create both field tags and field related information,
mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Right. Yeah, like I was saying last time, I think that DC date is a really good example for that because, you know, you have schema start date and schema end date, and you could also apply the property DC date to both of those. But you don't want start date and end date to be combined in the same field, you know, in the same value array.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like we're conflating a couple of things here because of convenience of notation. For instance, using it as a way of expressing something like a same as or a subproperty relationship in, on the one hand, or using it as some form of a vocabulary equivalence without actually stating sort of the RDFS or OWL relationships on the other hand.
Right, yeah. So I personally think that RDFS doesn't figure into our thinking at all on this. Where we came from in requesting this was simple bandwidth issues because a lot of the folks that are interested in this work are interested in it for mobile. So, you know, having to duplicate stuff a bunch of times, or I personally really don't like the idea of having different vocabularies that are exposed to different consumers via different HTTP headers, you know, like parameters in the HTTP headers. I don't think that that's the right way to expose information either. So it was basically how can we expose stuff to multiple consumers while still also making it mobile friendly.
Okay.
Right. Which I think is that's a really strong use case, I think. I mean, you know, we do want this stuff to be used in mobile, and we do want, and at the same time, we do want to be able to express a much richer, you know, set of information. And while the property generators do have a couple of downsides, I think the overall, use case that they enable is a fairly strong one. I mean, it's nice because it's not in this, you know, kind of theoretical RDF world. It's look, we want the data to be compact and we want to express as much as possible with that compact data. So that's good. It's nice to see something like that driving, you know, what we're putting in the spec. Okay, Greg, any other kind of questions or anything for Lynn or general comments on this feature before we continue?
No, I think that we're good to go.
Okay. And Lynn, I mean, it sounds like what's being proposed, Greg's proposal with the modifications that we've discussed, seems to address the Drupal use case as far as we know. Is there anything that you've kind of thought of in the last week or so since we spoke that would lead you to a different conclusion?
No, I mean, of course, I'll have to play with it and test it out. Once there's an implementation, then I can run things against it. and just make absolutely sure, but I'm pretty sure that it should work for us.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Okay. And Marcus, would you mind kind of discussing some of your reservations a bit on at least the oh, sorry. We haven't gone over Marcus's proposal yet. So the proposal that Marcus put forward, Marcus, maybe you can introduce it really quickly, and then we can go over some of the concerns that I had with it, and then kind of wrap this issue up.
Well, the main difference is that you basically separate the IDs, so you don't have a list containing all the IDs, but you have one, so to speak, main ID, and then a list of alternative IRIs. And a term also expands to those alternative IRIs. But in compaction, you just ignore them. So you just use the main IRI in compaction. And, well, this would make the algorithms quite trivial because compaction could stay as it currently is, and expansion would just need to, well, basically duplicate the output for those specific properties. But yeah, of course, you don't have any round tripping then at all, or you would just ignore the other data, or, well, actually the data would stay there, but with the full IRI. But normally your application would just ignore that anyway. And the reasoning behind it is that basically you have a main vocabulary that you're using for reading and writing, and the others are just to support other applications which don't understand that specific vocabulary. And that's why I introduced some more kind of generic vocabulary, such as schema.org or FOF or whatever. And, well, the write part doesn't work anyway, not with the current proposal we just talked about. It's more or less a simple addition to expansion.
One of the other things that you brought up in the issue was that you were concerned that people would think that there's some kind of implied relationship if we list all of these IDs in a list. Right, you said that they might think that means that there's effectively an LCMS. They don't know anything about RDF, but they think all of those things are equivalent when that's not actually what's going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, at least till now, we never spoke what the relationship between those IRIs in that array are. We just say, well, we expand it to all of them, and if we compact, we compact it to one, but the problem arises if you're not using the exact same context. So, for example, if you are a consumer and you're using your personal context and you say, well, I'm understanding, I don't know, FOF and schema.org, and I put both IRIs in there, I would assume that the developers assumes that both of those IRIs compact to the same term. But that's just the case if there is a value which has or which was expanded to both properties. So the data has to be twice in the input, in the expanded input, to be then in the compacted output. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. Or it would be in expanded form, still in expanded form. So it's not that all of those IRIs have to exist. It's not that any of those IRIs has to exist to compact to that specific term.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
Probably the thing I see most problematic with the approach.
I guess we can't. I think the reason we're doing that is we can't assume. You know, we wanted there to be clean round tripping. That's the first one. And then the second one was that we can't assume that the property generator generated all of the data that's expressed in the graph, Right. So the concern here is I think we're doing the right thing given the constraints that we have. And I think that developers are just going to have to understand how that works. Like, why either they're going to look at it and say, yeah, okay, that makes sense, or they're going to look at it and say, that looks really weird. Is that the right thing to happen? And then they're going to ask a question on some kind of question board, or they're going to look at the spec. Probably not look at the spec. They're going to ask a question among their developer friends, and someone's going to find out that the reason it's done that way is we have to do it that way in order to make sure that no extra data is deleted during the compaction process, and so that we don't, you know, no extra data is deleted, and we ensure to merge the data that needs to be merged.
But if we introduce that feature, then that feature can only ever merge if the input, the expansion context and the compaction context are exactly the same. Otherwise, you
that
can't
is correct.
Make use of that feature in compaction at all.
Yep, that's correct. That's a restriction of the algorithm. You don't have to use the same. You don't have to use the same context. You have to use the same property generator. But again, that's why I said we need to make that crystal clear in the spec, and let people know. Look, the property you will break. The property generators will break if you expect it to expand and compact and expand and compact, and you don't use the same property generator along with it. It's a limitation of the algorithm.
Couldn't understand what you were saying.
It's a limitation on the algorithm. That is, if you use a property generator, you must use the same property generator if you want round tripping to work correctly. We have explored other ways to not use the same context, but all of those solutions have become more complicated. Complicated to the point that we were concerned about the added complexity to the spec. The added algorithmic complexity to the spec. So there are ways to do it. It's just we don't have consensus on those other ways because we don't feel that they're better than kind of the modified proposal that Greg's put forward. Okay. So all of this stuff being said, I think it's fair to say that all of us have concerns about the property generator. Feature. It's not the most straightforward feature in JSON LD, but it does apply to a real world use case, and that's the reason we're putting it in the spec. Is that we feel the added benefit is good. You know, the trade offs are good. It adds more than it hurts. So anyway, I think the proposal on the table is to basically accept Greg's feature proposal with a few modifications, and to document this clearly in the spec. Does anyone object to that proposal, or would anyone object to that proposal, or think that there's another proposal that would get more consensus than that proposal? All right. So there are two proposals here. The first one is this.
Mark has dropped off briefly.
I'm back.
You back? Okay. Great.
That's fine. I can fix.
Oh, you're
don't
Nick.
Worry about it.
Your Nick.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I'll fix it in the minutes. You can just kind of proceed. So the first proposal is adopt Greg's property generator algorithm when expanding and compacting with the following modifications. The first one is use node definitions everywhere when expanding. The second one is generate bnode identifiers for all node definitions without an ID. And the third modification is use deep comparisons when eliminating subject definitions during compaction. So plus one, minus one, plus zero, anything in between. All right. Dave Longley is also a plus one on this. At least that's the discussion. That's where we were the last time we discussed this. And then Dave Lane, I don't know what you are. I think you're a plus zero on it. All right. I'm going to go ahead and resolve that. We can always reopen the issue if we find a better algorithm, a different algorithm, or something that works better for the Drupal use case. But for right now, we'll go ahead and proceed with that, with what Greg put forward. Based on that, the next proposal is basically to add some warning language to the spec. So let's see. Oh, that's interesting. So this is a complete aside, but in GitHub, I saw that Marcus, you just added that resolution to the thing. It's live. So all the issue tracking in GitHub is live, meaning I didn't refresh the page at all. It just popped up. It's neat.
Even if you sent an email to the issue tracker, it's updating live.
Yeah, that's interesting. That must be new, because I don't remember seeing that before either.
Mm-hmm. Resolution. Okay, so we have another proposal, which is basically to add warning language to the JSON-LD syntax and API specs, noting the most problematic issues with working with property generators. I think we have to do this, because it's not apparent.
I don't know that we actually need to vote on it, because it's not normative, sort of, by definition.
That's true. I'll just put it.
It doesn't hurt, though.
Yeah. I think it just signals that we discussed it, and it's clear. Okay. Let's see. Great. That's good. So let's move forward. I think... Sure.
Do we want to add a flag or something to disable that?
Disable what? Oh, you mean, so I don't know yet.
Well, I suggested that there might be a flag that would go back and forth between using node definitions everywhere or a single node definition and then the rest be node references, which Dave and Mono weren't too keen on, I think, just because flags, or the more flags you add, the more wishy-washy you are. But that certainly is one way to avoid the data explosion problem. And it makes it simplifies the node equality without requiring a deep comparison.
That's true. I guess I'm concerned that some people would use that. And some people would not. I guess that you could make the argument that the market will decide. Like, people will complain if they want to use subject definitions and not references.
Well, it's up to the consumer. The consumer decides to expand it because they want to. They might have different reasons for doing it. If they're simply like re-encoding, expand and then compact in order to then it doesn't matter. But if they really want to be able to use the data, then they would fully expand it in order to be sure it was available with whatever property they wanted to use.
All right. My understanding, though, is in the Drupal use case, they publish expanded form, not compact. Is that right, Lynn?
Actually, we would do compact form. We would publish in compact form.
Yeah, okay. That's the whole point, right? You do compact form so that it's a relatively small footprint over the wire. But you can take it on the client and expand it and work with it however you want. So that at that point you're in the developer, the consumer's hands, and providing them with a flag to sort of control how that works seems reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah,
you could even imagine that they might use if you were to use an alternative context where the property generator was exactly the same except the order of IRIs, and the node definition goes to the first IRI in that list, then that would be a way for them to, you know, sort of have their cake and eat it too. Instead of having to work with schema, they could work with FOF by just inverting the order of those things in the property generator, presuming that's how the algorithm was written to work.
Right. I mean, that's pretty convincing.
But, I mean, you can have nested context as well. So you're talking about the pre-processing step over the whole data, correct?
Well, when you expand, you give an external context to use for expansion, right? Now, if the node definitions, I suppose that if the document included a reference to the context, you'd have to
do some kind of arching or moving. Yeah,
that's problematic.
Okay, so let's back up to the idea that you would just allow just node references. So this isn't a turn the feature on and off. It's do you want to use node references or node definitions everywhere, except for the one location that has it. I think I'd be fine with that feature. My only hesitation with it is that we are adding a flag.
Or let's just do it without the flag, and we can include it ourselves in our processors.
Well, hold on. Oh, you mean that? Okay, so your processor can have a flag without the spec having
it's
to.
It's not in the spec, but everyone.
Well, that's fine. You're free to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Right. I'd prefer that.
Because I don't really like switching between node references and node definitions.
Yeah. So if that ends up being a feature that's not really that popular, it doesn't end up in JSON-LD. But if all of us end up implementing the feature and it's something that people end up using, we have to put it in the next version of the spec. I think that's a good way to kind of influence the design of the next spec. Okay, so the idea here is that developers may. We could put a may in the spec, right? Maybe the spec shouldn't talk about it at all.
I don't know. You can't add a may clause for all the things that a developer might do.
Right. Okay, then we'll just stay silent on it and. You know, the implementers will hopefully just know that. One of the ways that we could influence it is we could have a couple of test cases for it and see what, you know, and see if it's something that we can make them kind of optional test cases and see if people want to implement it or not. So that's one of the ways that we my concern is messaging to implementers that this is kind of an optional feature that's under discussion. Another way to do it would be to have a separate spec, but it seems kind of weird to have a spec for a flag. Okay. So do we all agree that we're not going to put any language about this in the spec, but we could, but any implementer could add it to their implementation, and then maybe we have some test cases for it?
It might be worth a note.
Okay.
Well, we can put that note where we put the warning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
Okay, I'm just going to do a real quick proposal so we remember. Proposal is to add a non-normative note to tell developers that their implementations may have a feature that allows all but one node definition created by a property generator to be collapsed into a node reference.
You know, I think it might even be useful if you're implementing a service and you're worried about this as being a DDoS vector, that you could just sort of have a configuration flag that caused your service to always, you know, basically act as if that flag is on.
Yep. Yeah. Marcus did raise an issue that I think we need to discuss at some point, and that's basically limiting the amount of memory and CPU the JSON-LD processor can consume. I think the memory issue is mitigated somewhat by this flag, this potential flag that an implementer could put in. But I think we should have some kind of hard limit in the processor. The processing, the CPU being eaten up can definitely be a DDoS vector or just a denial of service vector when you're normalizing. The memory issue is still, it's still an issue when you go to expand, because you might get a document in that's, you know, 1 meg, and your machine might not want to put more than, you know, 2 megs into processing JSON-LD documents. In having something that says that the memory limit on the JSON-LD processor is it can consume up to 2 megs and no more, that might be a might be helpful for, you know, small development environments.
It's not something I can really write in to a processor. It's sort of something that would have to be done at an operating system level and putting, you know, limits on the process, and might not be even possible. I don't know how you would do that in a JavaScript environment.
Well, you can count things like, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the number of bytes that are taken up, but you can put, say it's the, you know, it's the number of bytes in the that are in the JSON-LD document. So you could count at the very, you know, this would be a rough estimate, but you could count the key value pairs in expanded form, just the number of bytes that are there. That would be it definitely would not be a full, you know, picture. But it would give you a rough measure of how much, you know, how much data you can have before you start pushing the limits of the machine. I think the approach would be, it would be up to the implementers to figure out how to implement the approach, meeting the limit, like what the number of bytes limit means for the implementation and what the number of CPU cycles mean for the implementation. Because I agree with you, Greg. It's going to vary wildly from language to language and machine to machine. Okay. Anything else on this feature before we move on to the next one? All right. The next topic is the error handler behavior, issue 153. So I added some very preliminary spec text in. This is just experimental spec text to see if this is the type of feature that we want to see. This link is not going to work because of respec, but if you go to JSON-LD processor error, it's a type, or if you go to the conformance callback link, you can kind of see what the spec language is. So the idea here, let's look at the callback. It's called the conformance callback. So the conformance callback is called whenever there is a conformance issue with the incoming document, with the document that's currently being processed. So when you expand or you compact, there's some error that's raised. In by default, you can skip the error by what do you return? Yeah, so basically the return, the callback, the first item in the callback should be null.
JasonLD.org is not opening, not coming up for me.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah, because that's on Moniker, too. It's awesome.
Yeah. Let's see.
Should I cut spec text and put it in here? Have you guys had a chance to look at the...
Is it narrow to w3.org?
It's supposed to be updating to w3.org daily, but or every 15 minutes or what something, but I don't know if that script is actually running successfully. And unfortunately, it would take me a little bit of time to remember how to mirror it. Do you have a local copy that you could pull and look at?
Oh, yeah, I do. Reasonably up to date.
And you can look at the GitHub text as well. Let me do that. Let's see, spec.
I'm not up to date enough.
You can still pull, right? Because that's on GitHub.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, the API, that's... Then... Let's see, callbacks. Okay, here's a link to the HTML source on GitHub as well. If you don't have access to it, and let me get the conformance callback. This is the conformance callback. So the conformance callback is called anytime that there's a conformance issue. There are two arguments that are passed. The first one is the issue, the actual issue itself. And then the second one is the callback that should be called once a decision has been made on whether or not the callback conformance issue should raise an error or not. So you pass null to the callback if there is no issue, if an error should not be raised, but the value should be ignored. If the error should be raised, you basically pass the issue that was handed to you to the callback. This is the standard way that Node.js does callbacks, and it's a fairly popular way of doing it because you kind of you're given the error in the callback. So you can deal with it since it's right there. You don't have to go searching for the error if there is one. This is also the asynchronous mechanism this is the asynchronous way of dealing with it.
Did you consider doing an idle definition for the callback function?
I think there is one, isn't there? Isn't that the
Well, it's conformance callback, which takes its second argument as a function callback, which
you stay in line with what the
parameters are for it, but there's not a idle definition for the signature of that.
Yeah, I thought that would be overkill, but I could definitely add it in there.
Yeah, well, it might be, but...
That's fine. I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. So if you think it needs to be in there, I'll add it.
I think we usually do.
Okay, I'll add it.
How would that work if you are in the middle of a loop somewhere, and you already modified some of the properties, and then you encounter a problem? What would you pass the callback?
what do you mean? What would you pass as the document, as the source?
No, document? I mean, how would I then be able to resume the work? Like in expansion, I loop over all the properties of an object. For example, if the third property contains a list of lists, how would I then call that callback so that it continues after that property?
Call the callback so it continues after the property. You would use something like an async library. I mean, this is a fairly normal practice. I'd never actually seen this practice before I started working with Node.js, but Node.js has a library called async, and the way that you do looping, you know, you either loop over something in series, which means that you require the previous iteration to be done before the next iteration, or you loop over something in parallel. So if you have 50 items, you launch 50 basic instances of a function that processes each one of those items in the array. And the way that it's set up in the async library is it's really easy to basically say it's all done through this callback. So the return value that the async library expects is the callback from the conformance callback, which is going to have the error being an error value in the first position of the callback, or null in the first position of the callback, and that will instruct the loop whether it should continue processing or whether it should stop. So if the loop's operating in parallel, let's say it's 10 items long, you would have 10 function calls. And if there was an error, one of those function calls would return an error, and the loop would fail. The loop would call its error handler. If you were doing them in series, the same thing would happen. But you know, let's say it happens at item 5, the loop would process items 0 through 5, fail on 5 because the error callback would be called with the first value as the error, not null, and then it wouldn't continue on with the rest of the loop. If you haven't really programmed in Node.js, that probably didn't make any sense. Or if you haven't done any really heavy asynchronous programming, that probably didn't make sense. So I don't know. Did that answer your question, Marcus, or is it still a bit vague?
It did answer my question, but I still have to get my head around.
Okay.
Basically, because. Yeah.
And I think you did raise a good issue with this approach. You basically said, why don't we just say whether or not an error should be ignored or whether you should continue? So instead of having this, more complicated callback mechanism, conformance callback, an error handling mechanism, why don't we just put an option on the call to compact or expand that says whenever you see a list of lists, ignore it. Whenever you see, I forget what other errors we have, but whenever you see any other, error, either ignore it or throw an error. And I think that would be a good approach if we didn't think that we wanted to modify the data as it's being processed, as it's being compacted or expanded or anything like that. And I'm definitely a fan of trying to put that feature in the next version of JSON-LD, because there could be JSON data out there that's slightly problematic that we would want to modify. For example, if you had a list of lists, maybe what you would want to do is compact that list of lists into a single list and return it so that the processor could then kind of operate on the data. And so that, an error, so that the data wouldn't be ignored and an error would not be fired. So I guess that's the argument. That's the argument for this more complicated approach. And I don't know, Marcus, if that resonates with you or not. I don't know if that's a non-goal for you or if you think that that's worth doing.
Well, honestly, I still believe we are doing way too much here because, I mean, even if you encounter a list of lists, it's difficult to figure out where exactly in the document that was. You would have to know beforehand that you will encounter a list of lists, and then you could simply pre-process the data. I mean, if you don't know which errors to expect, you can't kind of program a generic error handler anyway. So I don't know if we really need such a complicated mechanism in there, whether we could just have a Boolean continue on error or ignore errors. Oh, stop on error or ignore errors.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I would like to see an implementation. I can't really make a decision just by reading this proposal, to be honest.
Okay, so perhaps what we need to do is implement it into the JSON LD.js library, and then people can take a look at what the code looks like.
Yeah, and how you can use that code. If, I mean, you know, if you can really solve some problems with this code, or if it's just, well, a feature which is nice in theory, but it's unpractical in practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, so I guess the next thing is for I guess Dave Longley to do an implementation of this feature. Right, or I guess it's conformance processing. Okay. Greg, any feedback on this particular feature?
No, I really haven't been focusing on that too much.
Okay. Lynn, any thoughts that you want to share on this feature? I mean, PHP is a very, it's not really an asynchronous type language, so this would be a little weird in PHP.
It's a little weird in Ruby, too.
Mm. Okay. Well, Dave Longley is also the one that's doing the PHP implementation, so he might have an opinion on this, meaning that the PHP implementation might decide to implement the API in a completely synchronous method, using a synchronous approach versus the asynchronous approach that's more natural to JavaScript programmers. Okay. Next issue up is issue 159. Anything else on this issue before we move forward? Okay. Next item up is issue 159, and this has to do with expanded form for language maps. So the question here is, how are we going to do the round tripping for language maps? We want language maps to round trip from compacted form to expanded form back to compacted form. The suggestion was made that we do at language in expanded form at the level of an object, and that would be a trigger to the JSON LD processor to put the data in a language map. The other approach would be to have one of the issues here is that, well, actually, no, that's not an issue. So there are four, I guess, options that we had considered the previous time we discussed this. One of them is to ask Drupal to change the data model, which is basically a non-starter. The second approach is to adopt a one-to-one mapping between compact and expanded form for language maps, which kind of adds complexity. Here, I'll go ahead and paste these in here, Marcus, so you don't have to type them out.
Okay.
One of them is to adopt a one-to-one mapping between compact and expanded form for language maps, which adds complexity. So that basically means that we would keep the language map in expanded form, but I think many of us didn't like that approach because it added complexity. The third thing, 1116, is to adopt a complex algorithm to reconstruct language maps from expanded form. So that basically means use at language colon and the value like en, which does add complexity. I don't remember why this was deemed non-deterministic. Does it seem like it would be unless...
Go ahead, Greg. Yeah, I think the problem comes with when you have nodes that are included, node definitions that are included under language maps, is knowing after the fact that that's where it was included.
Okay.
So if you have a language map, en, and value is an array with a string and an object definition, mm-hmm. and then you have fr that has a string, mm-hmm. you expand it, you get you get the single property, you get the two values now with languages attached, and you have the object definition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that caused the language to become the default language when you were expanding that node, the included node definitions. The question now is, okay, when you undo that, how do you know that the node definition went with English?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess to resolve that, we could do something like that, right? So this is expanded form, and the expanded form would basically throw all the data into at language, which would mean that it would be, that's effectively how you know that thing came from a language map.
But I don't think that's what people,
that makes
just not what people expect. If I got something like Ian. Okay, so if that was sort of in a language map, then I know that this is equivalent to having a value foo with language en and a value bar with language de.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of expect that when I expand, that's sort of the form I get because I might not want to compact the language map, and having at language in there would mean that I couldn't compact it any other way, and for that matter, framing. How does that interact with framing? It's another case where I think we are sort of adding the metadata as part of the data model again that I'm never really in favor of. So the consequence might means that if you happen to have had a node definition be included within a language map that you can't round trip it when you go to the compact again because you don't know where to put that node definition. Now, I think we had also considered using sort of language as a property value. So you could have something like this. Right, that might be that you, if you add language in the node definition, that serves two purposes. One, it's sort of equivalent to having a context that includes the language definition. And two, it can be used in order to unwind, to get to know that when you're compacting that this node definition would become part of a particular language map entry.
Doesn't that conflict with an expanded value for like a string? Or are you saying that strings would be sub items of that?
Well, so let me see if I can type something out that's further. So we have en, it contains foo, and it contains id bar. So that might be one language map entry. So there's a value foo, and there is a, let's say that's a node definition for bar. So if I expand it, it sort of looks like, excuse me while I do this, and then
so while Greg's doing that, Marcus, do you have any opinion on whether or not we should be putting kind of processor tags in here? Like there's at 11:19, I put that at language map, colon en, in there. That's another alternative.
I mean, we could also keep it quite clean by minting an IRI for that metadata there, for example. Then it would be just another property of the note.
Can you type out what you mean?
Well, let me just explain what I have in there before we
the
do
same,
something else.
Basically,
well,
it's the same that Crack Dick did. And if we round trip to RDF, we could convert that to an IRI. So we could even round trip it over RDF or to RDF.
But what is it you're converting to an IRI?
That at language that you have there in.
Oh, I see. So instead of using a language keyword.
This one here, yeah. If you're.
Use like PC language.
Or, yeah, something, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess personally, I sort of like the idea of having language be useful in a node definition like this, and I think it sort of solves this problem by allowing us to keep track of the language and provide a nice way to go back versus an IRI, which now sounds like there's some default vocabulary that we're invoking. We haven't done that anyplace else. We typically use keywords when we're sticking just within things that have meaning within JSON-LD. But this is, you know, unlike some other things that are sort of keywords that are more pragma-like, this actually, you know, already has meaning within JSON-LD.
The IRI was just for RDF round-tripping. I didn't meant it to be used within JSON-LD itself.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not so concerned about RDF round tripping of language maps. I think it's a JSON-LD-ish. It's a pretty specific JSON-LD feature. And if you go to RDF and try to come back and try to get back to a language map, I don't think it works. I wouldn't expect it to work because that feature is just not in RDF.
Well, I mean. It depends how we explain it, but otherwise we have no way to represent that in our data model. Then it's
well,
really
the JSON-LD data model is different from the RDF data model, so the way we represent
it, but we have
just
still
say this is
a graph. So we have.
No, I see what you're saying.
Property.
Well,
it,
you could say that one of the nodes is the language map entry. But we would have to change the data model. You're right. feel like it's, you know, I feel that when we think about it too deeply like that, I think that it's, I mean, this is a syntactic sugar for setting the language. And I do,
yeah, but,
I do agree
yeah.
that there's a kind of a conflict with the data model, but I don't know if, Go ahead, Greg.
I mean, there's a lot of precedents for doing this type of thing. We in RDFA, we sort of inherit the language attribute from HTML and use that to convey this information, which is otherwise semantic. There was some discussion in the RDF working group about doing this for Turtle. And the main reason it wasn't, as I recall, is because documents can be concatenated, which is done in practice, in which case you might inherit a language you didn't expect. But otherwise, it was something that was considered. It certainly looks like what might be a Turtle, processing instruction. So I think there's doing it here doesn't feel like we're straying too far away from convention.
I'm fine with Greg. I'm fine with your proposal, Greg. I think out of all the proposals, I like Greg's proposal right here the best. The only thing I'm concerned about is if there's some kind of non-deterministic issue, but I don't see anything right now.
I think as long as you don't flatten, because it should maintain the same. It should allow you to get back to where you were. But it's, you know, I'm at Wikidata on Friday, and I can discuss it with Denny and see what their thoughts are on terms of round tripping.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Also for them to understand how the feature would look in the end, and seeing what they think about that would be very helpful as well. Marcus, to answer your question in IRC, I think the language that is outside of the context ends up overriding. So the EN would end up overriding the language in the context. And since it's at the top level, it doesn't really make sense to put it in a language map. Technically, I guess it is in a language map, but
so
it's kind of a...
The language, at language... outside of at context means the same as inside of a context. So basically it sets the default language.
Yeah, just like it's inside a context.
Okay. Why don't we move we should move it out all the time, shouldn't we?
No, I think it's still reasonable to have a context be able to define the default language, so that you can that allows you to take a document that, or say the document where the language was assumed, apply a context where you're saying it is the language I want to use, and have it make sense.
Because you
can't insert,
I think it can be used in either location. And the precedence is the thing that is outside of the context takes precedence over the thing that's in the context.
So in compaction, if you would have a property with a language container, it would basically iterate over all the entries in that expanded IRI and look for add language in there. And if there is an add language, it would compact it to that term. Under that... well, language.
Under the language
index.
Key, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And presumably remove the language, the explicit language definition.
Yes.
Okay. I'm fine with that proposal. I think we should definitely write it up in spec text. Greg, do you want to do that, or I can try to take a cut at it?
I'll give it a shot. I'm still dealing with jet lag issues, so maybe I'll think about it tomorrow. About about the time I'm right on track is it be the time for me to turn around and go back home.
Right. The joys of flight. Okay.
It doesn't get easier, Greg, as you get older either.
Okay. Greg, to write up spec text, to write up language map. Spec text for the JSON LD API. Okay. We are at the end of the call.
So I just want to clarify. So I will write text into the issue, and then we will make another proposal about whether to accept that text next week, or am I to just go ahead and update the spec with text that accomplishes it?
I would be fine with you updating adding text to the spec, because I don't feel like
I think we need a resolution.
Okay. Let's see. The language map feature will be supported in the JSON LD API by injecting a at language keyword into a node definition. Injecting a language keyword into a node definition or an expanded value, is that right?
Well, we didn't talk about what happens if you have a data type value.
Yeah, what is the number?
Do we care? Do we care?
Yeah, we should probably care, because it's a conflict. It's kind of a conflict, right?
I would say that
there are two ways.
You could have a value with a type, and I think it's illegal to have a value with both a type and a language right now.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
So we would have to make that legal?
Well, we would have to specify what the interpretation of that is. The interpretation is the data type applies to the value, the language specifies that the item is in a language map. But I think that's confusing to people, or could be confusing to people. The other approach is we could wrap it in another object.
Well, I'd say with a value, if there is a type, you use that. Otherwise, if there's a language, you use that with regards to value processing. But for compaction processing, if you are compacting into a language map, you use the language key and the value in order to assign it to the appropriate language tag.
Yeah, the alternative is to add a language map keyword, which would make it much more clear what's going on.
Well, but, I mean, what's the meaning of four in English?
The number four?
You don't have a language for four, do you? I mean, yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, but
it doesn't apply to numbers and Booleans.
Well, you have right now, this could be the expanded version of 4. So if we had something like EN 4 as a language map, then that would have to expand to something like...
Yeah, I understand the problem, but couldn't we just say numbers don't round trip, just strings and nodes round trip?
I don't think we should say anything. Shouldn't round trip. I think what Greg typed in there is what we would have to do if we use that language. We wanted to keep things simple, or we introduce at language map to make it crystal clear what's going on.
But then you would only use that for. I mean, we've already determined that language makes sense to use for node definitions. If we use language map for node definitions, then it wouldn't have the language. It wouldn't have the consequence of setting the default language for that node definition.
That's true. I think
I think I'd rather just stick with make this legal and define what it means unambiguously.
Okay.
And what happens if value four is typed first?
What happens when?
If it's also type coerced, so if there is at type as well.
Yeah, so if there is at type, for the purpose of processing of the value, use at type, and then you possibly use language. So if there is no type, then you could use language. Right now, I think we say that there can be either a language or a type.
Yeah.
So we would allow it now to say there can be either or a language and type. If both exist for the purpose of evaluating as a value, the type is used. For the purpose of compaction to a language map, the language becomes used.
Right.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I got dropped during a key part of the conversation there. So you're saying that you would have in the JSON LD representation, the expanded representation, you would have language with the number value, you'd have it explicit there, and that it would just not convert to RDF, or if we had a data type in there as well, would it not round trip?
It would round trip, but let's see, this might be another way it could look, value for... So that might be something else you might see. So where previously you wouldn't have also seen the language in there. So the idea would be that this does represent a data type literal, right, with XSD integer. For that purpose, language is ignored. But the fact that language is there in the expanded forms means that we can round trip, compact back to the language map representation and properly assign the value for to the appropriate property, the language map property rather.
But
sorry, I think we lost Lynn again.
Yeah.
Too long-winded.
But you're saying that otherwise type would have precedence, right?
Yes, right.
So what if there is a second term which has a type coercion of XSD integer? Which one should then have precedence, the language map or the type coerced term?
What was the example?
If you have term A, which is a language map, and term B, which is type coerced to XSD integer, what would this value come back to?
Yeah. I hate this. I guess the fact that it has language in there would cause it to be used with a language map, because that's the only interpretation that makes sense.
Well,
yeah, I agree.
Not exactly, because 4 here is a string.
Yeah. Well, I use this as an alternative to the one where it was a numeric.
Yeah, but in this exact example, what would happen?
I think in this example, so if I had two terms that both expanded to HTTP prop, one of which was a type coerced integer and the other was a language map, if I see this thing with language in it, I would use that. I would allocate this to the language map property because it has language in there.
Greg, an alternative to this, instead of creating all these precedence rules, is to still support the specification of that language inside of an object in compact form. And in the expanded form, not allow that, but allow there to be an at lang map or at language map keyword. I think that would remove all of these fairly complicated precedence rules. I think that the problem with precedence rules is when you have them, it requires the developer working with the data to understand what the precedence rules are. It's the same issue with our term our IRI expansion algorithm, the IRI compaction algorithm, is that there's a set of precedence rules that we have in the algorithm that is not very it's very difficult for developers to remember it. So while it is deterministic, how it works is missed.
That's why I advocated dramatically simplifying it. But then it becomes useless for actually doing this type of stuff. So
which particular feature, the language map?
The very convoluted way in which we select from a range of possible properties. Based
right.
on precedence rules.
Right, but the argument I'm making is that having those precedence rules makes it complicated, and so applying that argument to this, what we're talking about right now, maybe it would be simpler to have at language map. Adding a new keyword, even though we don't like doing that, would be simpler than having a set of precedence rules.
Well, but there's still it's still a precedence rule. The precedence rule just involves looking at lang map instead of language.
But it has no
right,
other meaning.
It's
just metadata.
Right.
But it has. I'm sorry. What? Marcus? I missed what you said.
He said it, but it has no other meaning. It's just metadata. It just means one thing. Whereas that language means multiple different things based on where it's used. The same thing with that type. Right.
Right. Yeah, but. So if we expand and use lang map, I see, yeah. So, oh yeah, okay, I can buy that. I can buy that. An expanded form having language in there doesn't help the node definition otherwise because you've already expanded everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this might be a case where we have to do that.
But, I mean, isn't that the same argument we just had with property generators? That we don't want to have metadata in there.
It is.
Yeah. But there we had an alternative. And it didn't work with RDF at all. There was no way to be able to take an RDF document and compact it with property generators and get what you wanted. It's a little bit different because you can compact with language maps without having the lang map thing in there. And if you happen to have these overlapping, I mean, you shouldn't have properties that have both literals, language literals, and nodes anyway. It's sort of bad form. It's just as a theoretical possibility that both RDF and JSON-LD allow you to express.
Yeah, I think the reason that we keep it we tend to ignore some of these arguments when we're making decisions for certain features is because we have multiple requirements for the feature, and sometimes things don't resonate as well. So for example, when we were discussing type, like should we use at type to specify RDF type and the data type? In that place, it felt like overkill to have at type and at data type, mostly because developers don't really feel that there's a very big difference from that. They don't feel like there's a big difference between an object type and a data type. But in this case, we feel that having at language do double duty here would confuse developers more than it would help, right? I mean, the same argument can be used for at type. Having at type apply to objects and to data types could confuse developers, but we think that it's going to confuse developers less. Whereas with @language and @language map, if we just used @language, we think that that's definitely going to lead to confusion with developers. But we may sit on this for a couple of weeks. What do you mean?
I mean, like, if you expand data and then you compact it without using language maps, what do you do? Do you drop that @language map metadata? You wouldn't drop @type, never. But that,
right, but in this case, there's... Go ahead.
If you compact it using a different context, then there is metadata which is basically useless. It's just to allow round tripping if you're using the same context.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what, Greg, Greg and Marcus, when you're compacting, you have the information about that property. You know if that @language should be applying is a language map or not, right? You know, you kind of know what that @language should be used for. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, that was why I was saying we could use language.
No, it's
because
not true.
Yeah.
If you had both language and type, then you would... The question would be is, if you had two properties, one of which was a language map and one of them wasn't, and it was data typed integer, and you had something that could be interpreted as either a language map because it has language in there, or as an integer because that has type in there, then which one do you do? And that's where the precedence rules came in. So by using LangMap, if there is LangMap and there is a property generator appropriate for that property, then it gets applied to that appropriate LangMap property.
Yeah.
So that's the argument for that.
Yeah.
Now I presume that it gets dropped when you compact.
That
LangMap is only a feature of an expanded form, and it's dropped when you compact.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's the simplest solution that we can provide developers that ensures round tripping.
Okay. I'll hold my nose.
We are going. Yeah, same here. I don't really. Yeah.
So what you just said is we have @LangMap and we just drop it in compaction, or what did you just say?
Yes.
So when expanding the language map terms, we apply LangMap to node definitions, node references, and values that don't already have a lang. It wouldn't make sense to expand something with both language and lang map, would it? Of course, it wouldn't hurt either, but then you might have the case where you've added data in expanded form. You should be able to compact it with a lang map even though you didn't put @lang map in there. So I think it's only necessary for things that don't naturally go, you wouldn't naturally think go under a language map, like node definitions, node references, and typed literals.
But is that really a requirement that typed literals round trip in language maps?
I don't really know the use case for doing it. I don't know why you would do that.
Right. I don't know why you would do it, but it seems strange to have a specific case where it doesn't. Like, I think we should try and make this stuff apply generally.
But on the other hand, if the only reason that we have to add this LangMap feature is for a really bogus use case.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's primarily it. It's that when you look at expanded form, it's hard to tell what that @language is really saying when it comes to like expanded values. I think that's at least my reasoning for preferring language map over just language.
Yeah, but
okay,
I mean,
well,
I would also like to use language maps in compaction if they haven't been used in expansion before.
Yes, and you should be. You should be able to.
Yeah.
You don't have to, and in most cases, if you're just using strings, or you're using language values, that's what you would apply to a language map. Part of the reason we have no definitions in there is for Denny's use case, where he wants to include other stuff that is language related, such as, you know, the pronunciation of a literal. And so given that, then this allows us to be able to expand and compact with round tripping and not lose that information. He doesn't have a use case that I'm aware of where another value of that lang map could just be a typed literal. If that was the case, it would be included in a node definition.
I wonder if Marcus, are you still there? Did you lose your connection?
Yeah, I'm here again. No,
okay.
Yeah, 9.92.
That's weird.
So are you saying that you want to be able to go from expanded form back to compacted form and have a language map utilized without needing this lang map thing to be there?
No, what I'm saying is I don't think we need to support that special case where typed literals are in language maps. I mean, we don't need to make sure that they are round-trippable.
It's not that they're round-trippable, it's that all implementations do the same thing. So if all implementations basically, you know, kick out a conformance error when that happens, I'm fine with that, but we just need to make that decision.
Well, we could say it's illegal, yes.
That's what
But then happens. But then all of a sudden you've got your implementations generating illegal JSON-LD in expanded form. Right?
You just add that add language stack if it's not a typed literal. If it's a string, just a string, then it's fine. If it's a number, a boolean, or typed, an object in expanded object form, then it's not. Then you don't add it. And if you compact again, those wouldn't show up in the language map.
But what if they were in the language map in the beginning?
Sorry?
What if they were in the language map in the compacted form?
We could just say that having typed values as members of a language map is illegal. Therefore, you have a case where you're going to have language maps where the values are type literals?
We could have that basically for the same reason that we have language types for nodes. We want to be able to basically create what's a fake named graph that says, you know, that this value only applies, like this, the value of this field is only 4 in the German version, and the English version is 25.
Oh,
but
that's odd.
Right, that's the inconsistency between the way that we handle language and the way that RDF handles language that has kind of motivated our discussion on, you know, the Drupal community's push on this.
But, Lynn, is it important that that's a JSON number, or could it be a JSON string as well?
I honestly don't know. I know that some of the folks that are, you know, because there's a lot of different people who are looking to this work to support their use cases. So some of the folks I know have expressed that they really want to have data typing. But I honestly don't have enough familiarity with what they want to do with data typing and stuff like that to say for sure whether or not that's a requirement.
I think the other thing that's important to note is that we don't want to limit people's ability to express data in its correct form, and use language map. So I don't think it would be fair for us to say if you have a number, you can't you know, use a language map, it's just not going to work.
So this is something that you might do. You might have FOFAGE, which they had defined as being a language map, and then in English it's 42, and in German it's 59.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
sorry, Lynn. It was. I
was
mean,
that a question?
That was
you
sort
were
of.
Asking?
Yeah, it was sort of a. It was a statement. It was a question phrased as a statement.
Okay. Yes, that could be. I mean, that's an unusual case, but it could be. You know, more usual would be like people who had liked this piece of content. You know, a number of likes, and you might have three that like the English version, and 20 that like the German version.
Okay. Hmm. And you're using language maps, so it's okay for you that these things are interpreted as language values. I mean, if this was strings, then it might expand to, you know, just like this.
Let me just look. So you're talking about if both age were a string there, then it would... okay.
That's sort of what this would expand to. Because these were numeric values. If they had been string values, then it would, instead of LangMap, it would expand using language.
I think that's fine for our use case.
Okay.
Of course, it's going to start getting dicey ones like a Graphify or, you know, like whatever Objectify, whatever the API on top of that is, because, you know, if you want to be able to request by a value by a specific language, does it check both the lang map and the language? But I honestly don't know how that part of the API is planned to work, so I can't provide any useful information.
Yeah, neither do we, Lynn. Okay. I'm fairly convinced that we have to do the lang map thing. I think we could try and make that language work, and we should continue to think about that, but I think the only way to clearly define how this thing works in the simplest way is to use that lang map.
I'm just going to flesh out this thing so it's in the record.
Okay. I can do a proposal. So the language map feature will be supported by in the JSON-LD API by injecting a lang map keyword into JSON objects in expanded form. That.
Hold on, let me just get this in here so it's all together.
Okay.
There, so that's sort of the alternative interpretation.
Yeah. Okay. Marcus, any thoughts on a language versus lang map? Any closing thoughts on that since we're way over time?
Well, I mean, I'm not convinced that we should include language map, that add lang map. Because, well, it's, first of all, it's metadata. Secondly, what do you do if, I mean, we are expanding to two different things then. One, for a certain type of nodes, we are expanding to add language. For the others, we are expanding to add lang map. It looks like, well, a hack, basically.
It sure does.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if we should really include that.
Yeah, and the only reason to have the hack is so that we don't get to the case where we have both data type and language, which is an odd case anyway.
And and the really weird use case.
So I'm inclined to agree with you that we're adding a keyword to support an anti-pattern.
Yeah.
Okay. How about this, Greg? Instead of us doing a proposal today, if you could type up the proposal into the issue tracker and we can discuss it there.
Okay.
I think we have the two solutions in front of us that we can pick. We just need to come to we just need to figure out which one has greater consensus.
Yep.
Okay.
And I'd rather have the benefit of Nicholas' input and Francois, who can't, neither of them are really participating.
Right. Okay, so the action is Greg to add a language/lang map proposal to this issue. Which one is this?
Well, we already have an action for Greg to write up the language map spec text.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just not going to do it in a spec. I'm going to do it in the issue.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay. Anything else before we go? Sorry for the extra long call, but I think it was good because this was the next issue that was fairly big that we needed to discuss, but it looks like we're going to be able to handle it just fine. Okay, thanks everyone for the call. Talk with all of you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.